You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Join us on the line right now, legal analyst Joe DeGenovine. Man, we asked you to come back for another second in 1 week appearance because we got stuff to talk about. Good morning to you, Joe.
Good morning, Brian.
All right, so they've made a decision. Again, these 5:45, and actually it was 5:49. I think they did that just to spite me. But about 5:45, we get this announcement that we're going to have a special counsel to look into the matter with regard to the Trump campaign and Russia. Is there any there? What's your thought about this? Robert Mueller is the guy. What do we know about him, and do you think this is a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, first of all, Robert Mueller is a superb choice. Obviously, former FBI director, former assistant attorney general for the criminal division, just a tremendous individual, great reputation, and you can tell from the reaction of Republicans and Democrats that this was a superb choice by Rod Rosenstein, the deputy attorney general.
But is it a good idea to even have a special counsel? Some people think what's the crime? Why are we even bothering?
Well, there is a question about what the crime is, but I think what's happened here is that Rod Rosenstein determined that the situation, because of the president's statements and the memos from James Comey, put the matter in an entirely different light, which meant that there had to be fact-finding. And if there was going to be fact-finding that had to be done, it had to be done by someone outside the Department of Justice. And I agree with that decision. I think that, especially given who they chose, it will obviously elongate the process. It's going to take a lot more time, but it's probably the best thing for the department and also for the president because it resolves the matter. They can now say, this is under investigation. We're not at liberty to say anything further. I mean, if they're capable of doing that, this is actually could be a blessing in disguise.
How long is this investigation going to go? My fear is that this goes and we start hearing the results of this in 2019, just as Republicans are running for reelection.
Well, there's no way to tell how long any investigation is ever going to last. And no one who's a professional would ever give you a time limit for anything because that's just not the way you do an investigation. You investigate until you get your answers. So that's an unknown. It could go on for a short time. It could go on for a very long time. Given the nature of this investigation, which is the alleged collusion of which there is no proof between the Trump campaign and the Russians, you can only tell how long it's going to last by what the FBI has already been able to develop by way of information. So, you know, they said they had enough resources during testimony on Capitol Hill to finish it up. So I'm assuming that the investigation is at least pretty far along. But, the Comey memos and the president's tweets about having recording devices sort of changed the landscape and made this necessary.
But didn't the president say, he didn't say he had recording devices. He had said he had better hope that there were no recordings of the conversations. And I thought he was alluding to the fact that he was being surveilled by the FBI.
Yeah, I have no idea what the president meant, and I don't think anybody does.
Okay.
And all it does, though, is it's a complicating factor in a very, very long series of complicated actions. And when the Comey memos came out, which detailed the conversations with the president, it pretty much made this inevitable because you need answers. As I said, I think the president's going to benefit from this.
Sometimes these investigations go in directions that you don't see when they start. And I'm wondering, do you think it's possible that this investigation could look into things like, Susan Rice and the unmasking of American citizens in intelligence reports, or perhaps, you know, the leaking that has taken place by some in the intelligence community?
Well, I think it definitely could. The disclosure of the Flynn identity from the unmasking that was done during the Obama administration is a federal crime. The publication of that, of course, is not a crime, but the leaking to the newspaper is a federal crime. That is directly related to what is being investigated, which is the allegations of collusion. So certainly any leaks related to that would be investigatable, and I would think it would be a natural part of an investigation.
And what about this idea that people say, well, you get a special counsel, and by God, they got to justify their existence?
Well, I wouldn't worry about that in the case of Robert Mueller. I mean, he has his reputation. He's not interested in making a name for himself. He's interested in doing a job. He has a great reputation for public service and candor and integrity. He's not going to stretch this thing out. He's going to do his job and go home. Now, his job may take a little longer than anyone would anticipate, but this is not going to be stretched out by Bob Mueller for any nefarious reasons.
My last question for you is, does this blow back on Comey? Because on May 3rd, Comey testified that there were no attempts to impede the investigation. And then this memo that allegedly exists that no one has seen totally contradicts that. So does this blow back on him? Because he either you know, perjured himself, or the memo's a lie.
Well, the interpretation of these memos require us to see them physically and to look at the words and to analyze them. I'm not going to go by whatever was read to a New York Times reporter over the phone by a Comey associate. The truth is, what Comey put down is not in and of itself an attempt to influence the investigation, but it could be interpreted that way given other circumstances that happened in the meeting. We simply don't have enough facts to know anything about what Comey did or the president did. And so that's going to be part of Mueller's job.
Very quickly, and literally we are out of time, Joe Lieberman is FBI director.
A great idea.
Yeah. So you trust Joe to do that and be a good job there?
Oh, my goodness. The former state attorney general, former United States senator, has all the right instincts, not a partisan, a very serious man. Also, Frank Keating, former FBI agent and governor of Oklahoma. Great guy.
All right.
Would be wonderful.
We got to leave it there. Joe DeGenova, legal analyst. We really appreciate you joining us again today.
Thanks, Joe.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
And joining us here in studio, it's always a joy when he comes by, James Rosen with the Fox News Channel, who, by the way, is going to be hosting Special Report tonight. I've noticed you in the anchor chair more and more, my friend.
Well, it's good to be there, and it's good to be here. This is a little of the best of everything. Brian, of course, is a longtime and dear friend, so it's good to reunite. And Mary, who's lovely, I'm meeting for the first time.
Thank you. And I want you to know that I had a totally different my Friday outfit on, and I realized you were in studio. Do you know I went back and got changed this morning?
For you, James.
Wow, and here I showed up almost virtually like a ragamuffin.
I didn't know anyone else used that term. I thought I was the only one who said ragamuffin.
James, we got a lot to talk about and a lot to cover. There's so much going on in this town right now, but I want to start off by, you know, having a moment to talk about a guy that we both worked for. You worked for him for many years. I worked for him for 12 years, and who passed away yesterday, and it's Roger Ailes. It's a complicated conversation to have today, given all the events that have happened in the last year or so, but I think a lot of people who work for Roger Ailes have the sort of mixed emotions about it. I have great concern about what happened. I have great memories of the man.
Of course, first we are obligated to say that our thoughts and condolences are with Roger's family, Elizabeth and Zach, and all the people who knew him well and who loved him. Despite Roger Ailes' flaws, and I think we can also safely say that those have been fairly exhaustively cataloged over the last 12 months or so.
Right.
One has to give Roger Ailes his due as a titan in a bunch of different disciplines, whether it was political consulting, whether it was television news, whether it was talk. He changed the way that people talk in this country about a lot of different subjects. And I think what Roger would probably most want to be remembered as is not a political consultant, not a news executive. He'd want to be remembered as a master communicator. Mm. And he published a book in 1988 called You Are the Message, which was all about communication. And in all those different disciplines and enterprises in which Roger toiled and achieved so much, really they all boiled down to communication.
Yeah, and he was very good. I mean, the essence of effective communication was something he thought about every day. It became instinctive to him, and I think at times he got frustrated by people who didn't quite understand how to be a really effective communicator.
One didn't want to be the object of Roger Ailes' frustration, though, in general.
That's true. And I'll always remember, may I tell the story about the dead raccoon?
Well, it's your story.
Yeah. There was a time where Paula Zahn left the Fox News channel to go, I think, over to CBS. Wasn't it? CBS, I think. And Roger Ailes was quoted as saying, you know, I can fill that time slot with a dead raccoon and get better ratings. And then you were in the office as I sat there and immediately picked up the phone and started looking for a dead raccoon pelt, which I got from a guy in Maine and I had shipped to Roger's office. And it became something that was a very prominent feature in his office was the dead raccoon that he would show to everybody. And in fact, if you look at pictures of Roger in his office, that dead raccoon was on prominent display.
He thought very highly of you, I know that. And And anyway, fill in those listeners who might not know this, you and I worked alongside each other, about a foot apart from each other, shared an office for 8.5 years.
Yeah. I feel your pain.
It was the best 8 years of his life. He said so.
While you were in the room.
Yeah, while there was a person with a rubber truncheon standing over me.
Yeah. I have to say, listen, I only met Roger Ailes once and he didn't know it. And but listening to you guys tell your stories as you were, you know, during the news and everything was really enlightening. And it's nice to hear you share your stories, because most people just know the name Roger Ailes. And when I met him, I had no clue who he was. Yeah. And but it did make him laugh, and because I didn't know who he was, so I was quite forward. I was me, and it's interesting hearing the man, the stories of the guy
versus
he's a
the
human,
myth and the legend, right?
As opposed to this incredible titan, which he really was a titan. Yeah. Whether love him or hate him, love or hate the Fox News Channel, you have to respect what he accomplished and what he did. And he totally changed media. That's not an easy thing to do.
No.
And he started out with this little idea, and look what it grew into, and look what he engineered in 10 years, the Fox News Channel to becoming. It's incredible.
In fact, what Fox News started to become number one in all time slots, it started its run of dominance that continues today. In 2002, so the channel, I think, was started in October 1996, it went on the air, so it didn't even take him 10 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
I remember being there. I would think it was my second year at the Fox News Channel when they became number one. It was really quite something. Well, enough about that, and rest in peace, Roger Ailes. And again, it's not that we're ignoring the other stuff that has happened, but you also have to give the man his due for the many things that he accomplished.
Absolutely.
So, James, this town, the pace of things that have been breaking...
Wait a minute. Hashtag this town.
Yeah,
hashtag
right.
this
yeah,
town. For our radio listeners.
It's crazy what's going on in this day. Every day at 5 o'clock for the last 5 or 6 days, there's been some kind of bombshell announcement that sends everybody up into apoplexy as they breathlessly report new developments about James Comey is firing Russians, releasing classified data. It goes on and on and on. Have you ever seen anything quite like this?
No. The furious tempo of bombshell news is extraordinary. The only analog in my reporting career, mind you, that I came to Washington in 1999, is that it would be the post 9/11 period. Now it's fundamentally different because we're talking about war and peace there, and 3,000 lives lost. And in all the hubbub over James Comey or the Russians or who said what to who or who leaked what to who, it doesn't reach that kind of magnitude of seriousness, such as the devastation in New York and in Pennsylvania and at the Pentagon. But right after 9/11, you were drinking from a fire hose as a news reporter.
That's true. That's true. I noticed that you talked about James Comey. I saw you on the set, and you said something that I thought was very interesting, is that James Comey is a man who, when push comes to shove, if he feels like he's being asked to do something inappropriate, he will actually resign.
He has threatened to resign.
He has done that before. Tell that story.
Sure. In the first Bush-Cheney term, the deputy attorney general was a man named James Comey. And after 9/11, Vice President Cheney was the driving force behind enacting a terrorist surveillance program that amounted to warrantless wiretapping of Americans on American soil who were taking part in telephone conversations with suspected terrorists who were overseas. It was edgy, it was pushing the boundaries at the time, but it was thought to be a valuable tool in the war on terror. It had been authorized and reauthorized by the Attorney General at the time, John Ashcroft, about 20 times. John Ashcroft falls ill. He delegates his powers and his authorities to his deputy, James Comey. James Comey stands up and says, I am not going to reauthorize this valuable tool in the war on terror that's been authorized and reauthorized 20 times already because I don't like the supporting language underneath and it better be fixed. Cheney's people wouldn't back down. Finally, James Comey led something akin to a staff revolt at the Department of Justice and had the director of the FBI willing to resign, which was Robert Mueller at that time, a name now back in the news, Comey, to be followed by several staff members. And ultimately, President George W. Bush backed down, tweaked the language as was requested by Comey, and the program continued. But it shows that when James Comey believes he is being confronted with some immoral or illegal order, he has the wherewithal to stand up and threaten resignation. Don't forget, Comey's about 6'8".
Yeah.
He's not a guy that gets pushed around much. So the whole point of this is that if in February, when he wrote this sensational memo, he felt that he was being importuned or pressured by President Trump to shut down the Michael Flynn investigation, why didn't he resign or threaten to resign?
What happened between George W. Bush and now? Because it doesn't seem to me to be the same James Comey.
Well, I think if you ask me why was James Comey fired, I would tell you that because to too many sets of eyes on Capitol Hill within the ranks of the FBI, out there in the electorate, and most notably at the White House and the Department of Justice, James Comey had become a law unto himself. And this was most clearly evidenced when he would give congressional testimony over the last 12 months about the Clinton email case and everything else. It seemed very clearly that James Comey was making up Comey's rules as Comey went along in terms of what he would be able to disclose about investigations and when. He would cite, well, I've been given specific authorization by the Department of Justice to confirm that we are investigating alleged ties between the Trump campaign and the Kremlin. But, you know, go back to July of 2016 when he announced that there would be no prosecution of Hillary Clinton. He stood before the cameras and boldly told the world, nobody at the Department of Justice knows what I'm going to say. So who gets to determine when James Comey starts disclosing facts about cases?
Right.
It seemed like only Comey would know.
If he felt so compelled to enter the fray and hold that press conference, as it's been reported, largely because of the Loretta Lynch affair.
That's right.
And the tarmac affair with Bubba in Phoenix.
Affair is probably not the most apt word given that subject matter, but
kind of creepy. Yeah.
Also, we shouldn't have said that James Comey gave a press conference when he announced about Hillary Clinton not being prosecuted because he took no questions.
He took no questions.
Brian.
James, it's good to have you here. Good morning, and thanks a lot for coming by today.
Thank you. It means a lot to me.
For being in studio. It's
great. I love you guys. Thank you.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. More of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
And joining us on the line right now is a private detective and good friend of this program, Rod Wheeler, who used to work for the D.C. Police Department a long time ago. And there are new developments in a story that's about 10 months old. It has to do with the death of a DNC employee by the name of Seth Rich under mysterious circumstances. Rod, hold on a second. I want to read the first two graphs of a story that has been put on the Fox News website in the last few minutes.
Okay.
The Democratic National Committee staffer who was gunned down on July 10th on a Washington, D.C. street last July, just steps from his home, had leaked thousands of internal emails to WikiLeaks. Law enforcement sources tell Fox News. A federal investigator who reviewed an FBI forensic report detailing the contents of DNC staffer Seth Rich's computer generated within 96 hours after his murder said Rich made contact with WikiLeaks through Gavin McFadden, a now-deceased American investigative reporter, documentary filmmaker, and director of WikiLeaks who was living in London at the time. And then the story goes on to say this is consistent with what Rod Wheeler believes has happened. So, Rod Wheeler, what do you think has happened?
Well, I think exactly that, Brian. You know, I've been working on this case now on behalf of the Rich family for about 2 months. And I'll tell you, in many, many years of investigating homicides, I've never seen this police department in D.C. handle a case the way this case has been handled. Now, what do I mean by that? The detectives and the investigators working this death case have been totally tight-lipped, Brian. I mean, they haven't said a word. And I've met with them on several occasions, and I've even suggested, you know, what about taking another look at Seth Rich's computer? And the response I always get is a blank stare. And I had an investigator tell me to my face, he looked at me in the eyes, Brian, and he said, Rod, you know, I'll be honest with you, I cannot tell you anything. We were told to stand down. Now, that's huge. And I asked him, I said, well, who told you to stand down? And he gave me another blank stare as if he just could not say. So, you know, there's a lot going on here. I do think that there's some degree of involvement from others outside of the police department calling the shots as far as what's going on with this case.
If the FBI has the computer, as this federal law enforcement source seems to suggest that they've done a forensic examination of it, does that tell you anything specifically about what kind of investigation is ongoing?
Well, you know, you would think if the FBI has the computer and they've gone through it, then they would have seen these emails that I do believe is there and that this other forensic investigator said he saw, and they would have announced it, and then that way the police department can actually work the case from that perspective. I know for a fact, and this is the fact, I mean, the police department have not even interviewed several people over at the DNC. That's where Seth worked. And in any murder investigation, you want to go back to the places where this individual is known to have spent most of his time, the DNC at work. They haven't even interviewed folks over there. That's just not a good sign. One other thing real quickly that I think is a bombshell, and I'm not sure if it's in the report that came out this morning. I called the police department about a month ago to try to get information. You know who returned my telephone call?
Who?
A senior representative from the DNC. Now, how did a DNC representative know that I contacted the police department? This is before the police department even called me back. And I'm thinking to myself, wait a minute. How could a senior official from the DNC call me back when I called the police?
All right. Very quickly,
wow.
Because I want Mary to have a chance here to ask some questions. I just have to ask you this question. You weren't always of the belief that you are now. You at one point believed, because we did interviews with you in the past.
That's right.
In which you said, no, this looks like it was a robbery that went bad.
That's right. And you know what? Like in any case, you want to work all the theories. You know, I'm not one of those persons, Brian, and you've been knowing me a long, long time. I don't jump on conspiracy theories, but I do listen to them. And so I did work the botched robbery theory. I just don't see any information or evidence whatsoever that would support that. So what I have to do now is start looking at these other theories. And this one is the one that has led me to where we are today.
So did you ask, just curious, did you ask that DNC staffer who called you back when you called the police department, why are you calling me? How do you know to call me?
Right. Well, that's a good question, Mary. Here's actually what happened. I called the police department and I had left several messages. Well, I didn't hear back from the police department, right? Well, the DNC person, and I don't want to mention the name, but I have the name, contacted Seth Rich's father, who is Joel Rich, and asked him, why was I calling the police department inquiring about the death? I said, well, wait a minute. How did this person even know I called the police department?
Right.
And I haven't gotten any answers yet, but I have the name of the person. But I'll tell you this also, without mentioning this person's name, and I do have the name, I just don't want to say it. This is a person who worked directly with Seth at the DNC when he worked there. From a homicide detective perspective, that person is considered a person of interest in his death.
Interesting. So do you see this now that this seems to be gaining steam and this is becoming more public? Does this die?
The case itself?
Yeah.
No, I'm hoping that now with everybody kind of taking a look at this again, that the police department will come forward. And look, I believe that the police department, I think they're handcuffed, so to speak. They can't say anything. I think they want to, and I think they want to do the right thing. Look, I know Chief Newsom, and I know he's a stand-up guy, but I think that he's being restrained. I honestly believe this, and not for any political purposes. I'm not really into the politics thing, but I think the police department is being restrained by someone in government, I think on the mayor's level, as far as how much information they can release.
So I'm reading further into this Fox News story, and it says that the federal investigator, this is the federal investigator who is quoted by Fox News, says that 44,053 emails and 17,761 attachments between Democratic National Committee leaders spanning January 15 through May 2016 were transferred from Rich to McFadden before May 21st, which was the day that he was murdered.
Right.
That is a lot of emails.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Well, you know, that was his responsibility, Brian, over at the DNC. He was like their IT guy.
Mm-hmm.
So he did have access to the emails. Again, I don't know for sure if that's related to his death itself. We don't know that. But my whole point here is that that's one avenue that you have to look at, and you have to consider everything, you know, regardless of anybody's political, whatever their reason they're involved with this. So we have to look at that. And I think, like I said, with the publicity now, hopefully the police department and the FBI will take another look and really get on this case and start investigating it, because they haven't done it.
All right. We're going to leave it right there.
Wow.
Rod Wheeler with some bombshell stuff this morning regarding the death and investigation into Seth Rich, backed up by another source that is talking to Fox News. And that story can be found at foxnews.com if you want to take a look at it. Really interesting stuff. Rod, thank you so much.
Okay, thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Thank you. Wow, right. That's incredible.
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Now, more of the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Who are the sources? Oh, because they're hiding behind this anonymity.
Oh, please.
And that's what we're seeing.
Please, do not even start with me that you're just going to attack sources.
Okay, so
that is ridiculous.
So are you saying McMaster is lying?
Oh, man, sometimes it gets heated here, but we don't go like this when we have a guest. That was Carl Higbee on CNN last night, and he is joining us right now. Carl Higbee, former Navy SEAL strategist at AmeriMan LLC. Welcome to Mornings on the Mall. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me on.
Wow. So was she slapping you at that point, or?
No, she was clapping her hand. As soon as I started talking about facts, she started clapping her hands in my face to get me to stop talking.
Okay, so you were on CNN last night, and you were talking about these leaks and these leaks to the media that are going to attack President Trump over and over and over again.
Right.
Okay. Now, why were they so upset about you? What fact did you bring into play that set off that type of reaction?
Well, we were having a good debate, and prior to that clip, I had sat there and listened to the entire 4-versus-1 panel go off about how terrible Trump was and how awful, and he's anti this and just terrible. So I sat there very calmly, and finally I stood up, and you can find the whole link on my Twitter feed, actually, which is at Carl Higbee. But I said, you know what, I'm questioning your sources. I'm like, you've had people that were in the room, Secretary of State, the head of the NSC, come out and say that this is a false. These accounts are false. So we were in the room. We say it's false, but an anonymous source is supposed to be taken as fact. I find that highly prejudicial.
No, exactly. Anonymous sources, but that's what they live on. And here's the thing: you know, it is not about getting to the truth. It's about pushing an agenda.
Right.
Tucker Carlson made a very interesting point last night. I want you to listen to this.
Do not attack the stellar reporters of CNN. Okay.
Now, we don't know if she bit him in the commercial break, but it was moving into that direction.
So did you get bit?
No, I did not get bit. But the thing was, too, is I've actually been on Kate Baldwin's show quite a few times. We usually do it once a week. And she's never lost it like that. And what I think it is that the noose is starting to tighten around people who are perpetuating this lie, perpetuating an agenda. And people are starting to wake up because, look, honestly, my wife is a moderate person. She was very slightly tipped towards Donald Trump over Hillary Clinton, ever so slightly. But now, because of the left-wing media, she is full in the tank for Donald Trump, just simply on the basis that the media has tried to demonize him so much. She thinks it's completely irrational. So the media is actually doing the Republicans a favor here by pushing more people towards our side.
Well, let me say I appreciate that you go on CNN because, I mean, rare is the person who will go in and try to tell the other side. According to the Media Research Center, 92% of the time on CNN they're talking about Donald Trump, and the number of pundits who go up to talk about this, the breakdown is 96 against and 7-4. I mean, you know, you're rarer than hen's teeth over there at CNN when you go on and represent the other side.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like I said, it was a panel of 4-versus-1. And, you know, that's the problem, though, is nobody wants to go over there anymore and support Donald Trump because you get beaten down by these huge panels. I'll go. I mean, I don't mind. Nobody's shooting at me. It's fine.
You've been through worse, right?
Yeah, I've been through much worse. And that's the thing is, like, look, if we can't have a fair and open debate where we question actual sources, I mean, why? And later in the interview, Kayleigh McInerney, who was on with me, she goes, well, that's McMaster's opinion. I said, but he's in the room. So is the person who's in the room an opinion, but the anonymous source fact? Like, that doesn't make any sense.
Well, it's easy to judge McMaster. We know who he is, and we think highly. Most people think very highly of H.R. McMaster. We don't know who the anonymous source is. But here's the thing. Many of the sources that are being reported are people who are currently not in the administration. They are former administration officials, which means if they're getting classified information, it's coming from somebody on the inside, and that classified information transferred to somebody on the outside is illegal.
Right. And in the beginning of the clip, I read the CNN source quote from their website during the broadcast. And I said, this is from former officials. These people aren't even involved anymore. So how is their how can you guarantee their information is accurate and not just some partisan witch hunt?
Why do you think this is happening? Why are we seeing this is unprecedented in our history, what we're seeing right now. Why is this happening?
Oh, you know, I can say I was on board with Donald Trump from the day he came down the escalator at his tower. And it is the fact that he is going in there. Look, I mean, nobody's perfect, but he's perfect for me. And he's going in there. He's doing his best to break down a system that is failing. And the system itself is fighting back against it. So, you know what? Good on him. Keep fighting, and I'll be there every step of the way, because the mainstream media is going to do – they're going to kick and scream the entire way down this path.
Yeah, and it's great that your wife is coming around, and I think it's you're right that people are seeing this, but we need people like you to continue to tell people what they're watching and how this is being twisted, because otherwise it takes a lot of work to see it. Carl, thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciate it. Keep up the good fight.
Thank you very much for having me.
That's Carl Higbee, former Navy SEAL and strategist at Ameriman LLC.
ABC,
yeah, but
who
are the sources?
Carl.
Who are the sources? Oh, because they're hiding behind this in anonymity.
Oh, please.
And that's what we're seeing.
Please, do not even start with me that you're just going to attack sources.
Okay, so
that is ridiculous.
So are you saying McMaster's lying?
You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall, 5 to 9, Monday through Friday, only on 105.9 FM, WMAL. You're listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall.
Well, we want to bring you the news that is just crossing the wires and is now confirmed and by a couple of different sources. Roger Ailes, the CEO and founder of the Fox News Channel, has passed away apparently overnight or early this morning. We have a statement from his wife, Elizabeth Ailes. I'll read it to you, and it's completely. I am profoundly sad and heartbroken to report that my husband, Roger Ailes, passed away this morning. Roger was a loving husband to me, his son Jack, Zachary, and a loyal friend to many. He was a patriot, profoundly grateful to live in a country that gave him so much opportunity to work hard, to rise, and then to give back. During a career that stretched over more than five decades, his work in entertainment, in politics, and in news affected the lives of many millions. And so even as we mourn his death, we celebrate his life. That from Elizabeth Ailes, wife to Roger Ailes, who died apparently this morning at the age of 77. That's all we know really about his death. We don't know the circumstances, but we will, of course, learn that, I would imagine, as the day goes forward. Let me just say I worked for Roger Ailes for 12 years,
mm-hmm.
and I liked him.
Yeah.
He's a good man. At least I always thought so. In my experiences with the guy, he was nothing but honorable and straightforward, and his word was his bond. And I trusted him, and I liked him, and I was proud to work for him.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this stuff that's happened since, we have to make a judgment about that. But it was surprising to me. It was shocking to me to hear all of these stories about Roger, and I was very saddened by the way his career at Fox News Channel came to an end. But, people are complex. And if there was a dark side to Roger Ailes, I don't know. But I can tell you there was also a good side to the man. Mm-hmm. And I'll miss him greatly. Heather Hunter also worked for Roger for a while.
Roger's the reason why I came to Washington, D.C. I wanted to work for Fox News Channel, and I was in awe of him. I read You Are the Message, and I studied his career. He was one of the youngest executive producers, and he worked for the Mike Douglas Show. And just his career in programming was just incredible. His impact on broadcasting and the history in the making is just, there's no other career that touches it. And here's a clip of him talking about how he helped make the moon landing coverage possible.
We'd done split screens before, but never really from the Earth to moon.
Thank you, Mr. President. It's a great honor and privilege for us to be here.
The problem was that there was no way to predict which way Armstrong would be standing and facing on the moon. So if I'm facing you, and then we cut to the camera of Nixon and he's turned the other way, he could be talking to Armstrong's back. So I had to solve the problem quickly, and I realized Nixon's going to take his cue from a monitor in the Oval Office. So I had a monitor put on each side of his desk. And I said to him, I'm going to see that moon feed just before you see it. And I will cue you if Armstrong's that way, I'll cue you that way. If he's not, we'll go that way. And that's why you end up with them sort of looking at each other, because it could have been just the opposite. It could have been a fiasco.
Yeah, I mean, brilliant, as you both have said. Mm-hmm. I mean, regardless of how things ended, he started a revolution in television.
I thought extremely highly of him. I was surprised by the allegations, even though I worked for somebody who had made those allegations. I thought he was an incredible broadcaster and programmer.
And isn't it interesting listening to him talk about the moon clip and the technical aspects of television? He was very much that way. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was a red phone in the control room. And if the red phone rang, it was Roger. And generally it was Roger saying, you know, why did you do that way? And why didn't you have that picture? And why did you frame it up this way? I mean, he was always into the technical aspects of broadcasting. He understood it intimately. And as a result, many of the things that you see on cable news today were things that were sort of brought to the table by Roger Ailes. You know, you look at CNN today, it looks a lot more like Fox mm-hmm. than it did when Fox came along.
I've been on the receiving end of the red phone. But he's a perfectionist.
Yes.
He was perfectionist. Yes. That he was genius in that.
He was one of those guys, you know, not a very tall man, but an imposing personality and presence when he walked into the room. And he had a way of addressing a crowd and making people listen in a compelled way to what he had to say. And he had an amazing ability of finding good people and telling them, I'm going to let you do this. You know, here's your marching order. This is what I want accomplished. Now go do it.
He had a vision, and he hired highly talented people to do it.
Well, Roger Ailes, if you've just joining us, we've just learned that Roger Ailes, the Fox News CEO, is dead at age 77. A statement from his wife, Elizabeth Ailes, confirms that he died, as she says, early this morning. No details on that, but we'll continue to find out more about it. He is survived, of course, by his wife, Elizabeth, and his son, Zachary. I think that there will be a lot of people at the Fox News Channel who have worked for him, who will feel very sadly as I do today.
You've been listening to the best of Mornings on the Mall. Listen Monday through Friday, 5 to 9 a.m. to hear the show live.